Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. So great to have you join me. Me and Will, each and every Saturday, for 11 years. Do the math. Can't even think about it. Maybe over 500 shows. You must ask yourself, how does he come up with a different topic every Saturday? You know what? It's not difficult. You live a life, you're active, and it's just incredible. Trying to figure out the meaning of life. I think about it every day, try to find clues. And today's topic is really near and dear. What exactly should you be doing with your life? Who knew that you can learn about it from people who've had death face them too soon in their life? My guest at 8:15 worked side by side with Steve Jobs for many years. Cannot wait to talk to him about what it was like to be next to the Thomas Edison of our generation. Thinking, just micro-analysis, taking on every challenge. That computer that's in front of you right now, just the whole idea that it could be pages, one on top of the other. The people at Xerox pitched to Steve Jobs some of their ideas in research and development. You'll learn this when you read his book by Walter Isaacson, Steve Jobs. And he misunderstood that the research and development people at Xerox had come up with a way on a screen to make it look like it was pieces of paper, one on top of the other. They didn't come up with that. He couldn't wait to run back to tell his engineers at Apple, "Oh my God, we got to do that. I just saw it. It's possible." And they go, "It's impossible. We can't do that. It's just a single screen. How do you make layers on a single screen?" He says, "It is possible. I saw it." But actually, it turns out he never saw it. He misunderstood it. But he made those engineers so crazy that they actually came up with it. Oh, my God. When you watch him pitch the idea of the iPhone in 2007... you see him show the Palm Pilot, the Nokia phone, the BlackBerry, all those competitors for smartphones. And you see him say, "Smartphones, they're not very smart because the damn typewriter keys take up 40% of the whole phone. What do you need those keys for? They're in the way. Let's make it a touchscreen like a computer. That way you get the whole screen. And then you can eliminate them or bring them in whenever you want." Wow. This is why you go to a restaurant, if you can even go to a restaurant now, and you'll see a family, the mother, the father, and the two kids, four people at the table. Nobody's talking to each other. Everybody's looking at their phone. It's like heroin. This telephone that he came up with has changed everything. Let me give you some advice. Don't sleep next to the phone. Put it in another room, let it charge. Because it'll consume you. It has a lot of good, but it has a lot of bad. But when I knew that Richard Wolpert, who worked with Steve Jobs, was going to be my guest, it made me think about this man who sucked the juice out of every second he was here. On this planet, alive, because he died at 56 years old. He died young. And he gave a speech in 2005 to the Stanford graduating class, what he learned by being given a diagnosis that you're going to die soon. Let's listen to Steve Jobs, number one.
When I was 17, I read a quote that went something like, if you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right. It made an impression on me, and since then, for the past 33 years, I've looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something.
Next.
Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose.
Now he starts to teach us. I'm a guy who saw death too soon. This is what it taught me that I'm going to teach you, a young college graduate. Number three.
You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart. About a year ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had a scan at 7:30 in the morning, and it clearly showed a tumor on my pancreas. I didn't even know what a pancreas was. The doctors told me this was almost certainly a type of cancer that is incurable, and that I should expect to live no longer than 3 to 6 months.
Get your affairs in order. Next.
My doctor advised me to go home and get my affairs in order, which is doctor's code for prepare to die. It means to try and tell your kids everything. You thought you'd have the next 10 years to tell them in just a few months. It means to make sure everything is buttoned up so that it will be as easy as possible for your family. It means to say your goodbyes.
Here he now describes the day of the biopsy, where he's being given this sentence of death. Next.
I live with that diagnosis all day. Later that evening, I had a biopsy where they stuck an endoscope down my throat, through my stomach and into my intestines, put a needle into my pancreas and got a few cells from the tumor. I was sedated, but my wife, who was there, told me that when they viewed the cells under a microscope, the doctor started crying because it turned out to be a very rare form of pancreatic cancer that is curable with surgery. I had the surgery, and thankfully, I'm fine now.
How do you face death, Steve Jobs? You can teach us. Next.
This was the closest I've been to facing death, and I hope it's the closest I get for a few more decades. Having lived through it, I can now say this to you with a bit more certainty than when death was a useful but purely intellectual concept. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet, death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it.
I love this line. Death is the best invention of life. The opposites live together. Next.
And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Right now, the new is you. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Sorry to be so dramatic, but it's quite true.
And here's the advice. Don't live someone else's life. Do what you want to do. Dr. Clapper, be on the radio on Saturday if that's what you want to do. Yeah, that's what I want to do after a long week of seeing patients and doing surgeries. Finally, from Steve Jobs.
Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary.
In the world of art, where do we have a speech like this? Where do we have a person like this who faces death, given a terminal illness, and tells us, now that I know I'm going to die early, let me tell you how you should live your life. This was when Warren Zevon passed away, singer-songwriter who was David Letterman's friend and favorite musician. Listen to David Letterman announcing the death of his good friend Warren Zevon, who died of lung cancer. A sentence of 3 months to live, but during that time, taught David Letterman and all of us how to appreciate life, because there is a death. Number one.
And, of course, today we received the sad news that our good friend Warren Zevon passed away.
Isn't that terrible?
He had been ill, I guess, for close to a year.
Right.
And he was on our program just about a year ago in October. And it's a very sad thing. He was a very nice man. He was a great friend of ours. He'd been on this show many, many times. He appeared as a guest, I think, about five times on The Late Show. On our old show, the one over at NBC, Paul and I used to have, he was a guest nine times. And he filled in for Paul when Paul was not able to be here about 20 times.
Yeah.
So we got to know Warren Zevon very, very well.
Next.
But he's one of these guys, even when he was here and we knew he was dying, because of the kind of reputation that he had and because of his music and because of the life he led, you had a feeling maybe he would come back around and win this one. Didn't you get absolutely, that feeling,
yeah,
Paul?
Absolutely, especially since, you know, his diagnosis changed.
That's
and,
right.
You know, he said at one point, I'm not a hypochondriac. Really, they told me that I only had certain amount of, because he had outlived the diagnosis.
That's right. And we kept getting reports that he was feeling a little better and feeling a little stronger.
There's a lyric in one of my favorite songs by Phil Oakes, folk singer from the 60s, who at age 34 actually took his own life. So sad, Phil Oakes. But he wrote in one of his songs talking about Abraham Lincoln and John Kennedy. The lyric is, "A man so full of life, even death was caught off guard." That's what it sounds like with Warren Zevon. But I just love, and he wrote Werewolves of London. You've heard his songs. Songs sung by Linda Ronstadt. He was awesome. A poet, a storyteller. But I'm just amazed at how much David Letterman loved him and how much he meant to him. Next.
People are always asking me, what do I like about his music? And I'm not a musicologist or an expert about music or anything, but I've tried to think very hard about what it is about this man's music that was that I loved so much. One, the music itself was just exciting. It was just thundering and exciting and rhythmic and complicated and unusual rock and roll. It was not the kind of rock and roll you would hear much of. And then the lyrics... Oh, my God, the lyrics were so vivid, just very evocative, and each song that you listened to was like watching a motion picture.
Yeah. Next.
He was a poet and a storyteller and a good friend of ours, and we all knew this was coming, hoping that it wouldn't, but yesterday afternoon in California, the inevitable happened, so... We're very sad about that. I want to show you one moment when Warren was on the program in October, and it was a little awkward because we knew he was dying. We were talking about him dying, and it's just a difficult conversation, as you obviously know or would guess, to have with anybody. And I asked him if, from his perspective, he knew anything about life and death that maybe the rest of us didn't, and this is what Warren had to say.
So now you're going to hear David Letterman, ask Warren Zevon. You got mesothelioma. You're going to die in 3 months. We're going to miss you. But Warren, what could you tell us about what we should do with our lives while we're still here? This is the most profound and yet simplistic answer that we all should pay attention to. Let's hear.
From your perspective now, do you know something about life and death that maybe I don't know? No.
Not unless I know how much you're supposed to enjoy every sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And this that's it.
That's it.
It was. It was so simple and so reassuring and so obvious, and I felt so good that he didn't really know any more than you're supposed to know. That's the lesson you need to live each day of your life with, and there he had it for us, and I thought that was quite sweet and quite touching.
So get in your car and drive to Ventura and go to Good Time Donuts. Treat yourself. Have a cup of coffee and a blueberry glazed donut and tell Sue I sent you. Because that's what it's all about. Coming up next, we're going to talk to a man who's an expert. An expert on how to live your life. He knows what Steve Jobs was really like, and I can't wait to ask him all about it. My guest coming up next, the great Richard Wolpert. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
This is Keyshawn in the Morning. My man, Dr. Clapper, and the Weekend Warriors Show starts your Saturday morning. Join the doc from 7 to 9 a.m. But don't miss my show, Monday morning on 710 ESPN.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
Magandang umaga.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Umi ihi bang pasyente mo.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN. 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Died at age 56. But he teaches us, enjoy every sandwich. It's awesome. How to live your life, just like Steve Jobs. And nobody knows Steve Jobs better that I know than this man, the great Richard Wolpert. Richard, thanks so much for making time and calling all the way from the Bahamas.
I wasn't going to point that out, Dr. Clapper, but thank you for having me. We're dealing with a bit of a storm here, but I think I got a good connection right now.
Oh, you got a beautiful connection. So I don't know if you got to hear any of the sound bites.
I did.
But... you know, I've been doing this show now 11 years. Each and every Saturday, I maybe have missed 5 shows in 11 years. And it's really something that I value because of how many people it touches. And how do I know that? Not from Twitter, not from all the, which is great, but they come and see me in my office. They've waited 3 months to come get an appointment, and I'll ask them, who sent you here? And they'll go, you did. And they're young, they're old. They come from all walks of life, and it's a beautiful thing. Today's show is the epitome. This, to me, Richard, is the ultimate show about how you should live your life. And I think you spent a lot of time with Steve Jobs, who indirectly and directly changed all of our lives. I don't care what you do for a living. That damn iPhone that's in all of our pockets has made the world different. So take us back, Richard. What was it like to be side by side with that guy?
Yeah, and just to put it in perspective, I'm sometimes a bit too self-deprecating, but I don't want to paint it like Steve Jobs and I were buddies. One of my very, very good friends, Mike Slade, I mean, he was truly one of Steve Jobs' best friends. So I don't want to point that light. But did we have meals together many times? Yes. Did I spend half days with him in meetings? Yes. Did I do the keynote with him at Macworld 1998 when he announced the iMac? Yes. Wow. Did he try and hire me back in 1999? And I said no, which is probably one of the biggest freaking mistakes I ever made. Yes. So I just want to put yes, I know him better than probably most that you have spoken to, but I don't want to pitch it.
Right.
Even
that's
I
fine.
Were like best buds.
That's fine.
And, you know, I had different experiences with him. It was very different. So my first job out of school in 1985 was at Apple on the original Mac software team when Steve was in charge.
Wow.
He was completely infatuated with the Macintosh, which had just shipped. And I was probably in the room with him that year and a half. So, question. I know you as Dr. Clapper. Do I call you Dr. Clapper on your podcast?
You can call me whatever you want. You can call me Robbie.
Robbie. Okay. So, I was maybe in the room with him 5 or 10 times in that year and a half, Robbie. And I was scared to death, right? I was a 22-year-old young punk. And I had fallen in love with the Macintosh. Like, when it released when I was a senior in college, to me, it was like, oh, my God, I've seen the future. I moved to Cupertino and I graduated without a job, just knowing I am going to get a job at Apple. And I did. But I never said a word to the man, right? He was God, even then to me in 1985, just his visionary and all he'd been through. And a lot of people I don't know, but prior to starting Apple, he spent almost a year in India, like doing a self, you know, self-realization journey that led to great bumper stickers he had at Apple in 1985, like the journey is the reward, which is a quote I still use today. So that was my early sort of Steve Jobs experience. And I got to know him a little bit through my first software company, which was a Mac software company called After Hours Software, which is one of the top-selling software companies for the Mac. And then the first really interesting experience I had with him was when he was at Next Computer. And how long do you want me to go here, Robbie? Because I could go for 20 minutes.
I'll interrupt you. I'm not embarrassed. Don't worry. Keep going. It's just fascinating that you walk side by side or in rooms with Thomas Edison, basically, a man who – and I'm really fascinated by the mechanism of it all. George Steinbrenner, the most hated owner. Lorne Michaels, nobody says nice things about this guy, but he's got the longest-running show. And everybody talks about Steve Jobs, what a jerk he was. I refuse to believe that you have to be a jerk to be successful. I don't want to believe that. But somehow this guy got the most out of people like you. He made you do things that you didn't even think you could do. Absolutely. And I want to know how he did that.
Yeah. He got the best out of people. Was he an asshole? I don't know if I'd go that far. That's a harsh word. But was he – did he not put up with anything less than greatness? Absolutely. If what you were doing was not great, he would not put up with it. He would call you out on it. He would kill your project. He would send you off. And he got a reputation of being an asshole because of that. But one of my very dear friends, one of my best men at my wedding, a guy named got a lot of assholes in the world, and none of them have invented the Macintosh. Yeah. So he kind of, you know, gave Steve some latitude to be maybe not an asshole, but certainly assertive and defend greatness, because what he created in the Macintosh, and then later when he came back to Apple with the iMac, and then later with the iPod, and then later with the iPhone and the watch. And, you know, I was thinking about this in anticipation of our conversation this morning, and I mean no disrespect to Tim Cook, who on an operating basis has done an amazing job with the company, but there's not a product out today at Apple that wasn't there when Steve Jobs passed away. So if you think about his vision, and I think it's been, 7, 8, 9 years since he passed?
2011, yep, 11 years.
Yeah, so 11 years, yeah, even more than I thought. So his vision from 11 years ago is still what's driving the products of the company today. And, you know, one funny story, which I think your listeners will appreciate. So I got a job in 1995 as a president of Disney Online. And it was my first time working at an entertainment company. I was a tech guy. And there was a guy that worked in corporate that was a Steve Jobs fanboy. Like anything Steve did was great. At the time, Steve was running Next Computer, which is a company he started when he got kicked out of Apple. And it was not doing very well. And it was a beautiful computer, like anything Steve did, but it was like $12,000. It didn't work with any other products. It didn't work with any other computers. And Disney had bought like several thousand of these things. And Michael Eisner, who was CEO at the time, brought me in and said, you know, what should we use? Should we use Macs? Should we use Next Computer? Should we use Windows? And I was like, well, I'm a Mac guy, but corporate-wise, you should Windows, and creatively, you should use the Mac and probably not use the Next. And about a month later, I get a call, and somebody's like, Steve Jobs is on the phone with you. It's one of those, like, is this one of my best friends, like, you know, messing around with me or not? I don't know. So I get on the phone, and he's like, Richard, you know, I know you started your career at Apple, right? I'm like, yeah, I did, Steve. And I got a little quiver in my voice, right, about Robbie. And he's like, so I understand you're the man at Disney that just shut off my orders for Next. That's true. And here's this guy who I think of as like a god, like a visionary, a genius. But that computer was not. They're like, one, I'm like, Steve, I hate to say this to you, but yeah. And he's like, well, I want to fly you up here for half a day, show you why you're wrong. And you know, who's going to say no to that offer?
Wow.
So me and a couple of my guys from Disney, we fly up for a day. We roll out a red carpet in the morning. Our names are on the sign. Best food ever, as Apple still has today. Dog and pony show for 3 hours about how awesome it is. And he's like, let's go into my office. And we go into his office, and we're sitting, you know, maybe a chair apart from each other. And he's got the black turtleneck on already. He got in that phase of his life. And he leans over and he says, so now that you've seen the vision, I'm sure you're going to go back to Disney and say they should start buying Next Computer again. And this, I say, Rob, is one of the hardest no's ever in my life, right? Because, and I think I made the right decision. Obviously, he shut down the Next Computer when Apple bought Next back himself. So I'm like, Steve, I don't even know how to say this to you, but no. And all the graciousness of 3.5 hours turned into a back turn, and my assistant will see you out.
Wow. Good for you for being honest. And on some level, he appreciated that. He appreciated that.
And here's how he, here's how he appreciated it. So about a year later, I read about these iMacs coming out. We were coming out with the kids' subscription service. And I called him up, and I said, I have an idea for you. And he got on the phone. I'm like, we're launching this kids' subscription service this summer. If you send me some prototype iMacs, I will launch it on Windows and the Mac the same day when you launch the iMac. And he was like, Richard, thank you for the call. That's awesome. Let's do it. And we did it. We worked together for 6 months. And I have the 13th ever prototype-made iMac in my office at home. And that's what we used to program it on. And then Mac 98, I spent the entire day with him. We did the keynote, the one of his famous Macworld keynote addresses in New York. And he introduced the iMac, and he introduced me, and I showed what we did for Disney. And then I had a great relationship with him after that. And you know, I say, and you touched on this, Rod, but guys like that respect and want people to say no when it's correct.
They kind of
yearn for it.
Wow.
They kind of yearn for it because most people are afraid to say no to somebody like that. So I think I built his respect when I did it.
Yep.
And then I built his friendship when I called him back and said, but here's something that makes sense.
What a great lesson. What a great lesson. Yeah. You just did it the right way. You lived your life totally not trying to be something else. It's beautiful what you did. Tell me about Kids and Trips. What is that? Does it still exist?
Kids and Trips.
Is that what you said?
You're talking about the...
Yeah. That when you launched... maybe I misheard you. What was the launch with the iMac that he was doing? Was it Kids and Trips? What is that?
No, he was launching the iMac. It was the launch of the five colored, you know, the blueberry.
Yes, I remember. I bought one of them.
Purple.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was the launch, and the product we launched on it was a kids subscription service.
Oh.
It was called Disney's Daily Blast. It was a daily animated series of cartoons and puzzles and games and jokes, and we're talking 1998. So we're talking what, 23 years ago? It was about 17 years ahead of its time. And I don't mean that in an impressive way. I mean that almost in an embarrassing way. I have this saying, I'm going to call you Dr. Clapper because that's how I know you. But I have this saying, Dr. In technology, if you're right but you're too early, you're actually wrong. And too early is anything that's 2 years or more out.
Richard, do you still have any friends or relationships that are still at Apple after all these years?
I do not know.
They're all gone.
I mean, I knew Steve. I knew Phil Schiller a little. I think he's pretty much retired at this point. I knew some of Steve's lieutenants well. But, you know, when I was having those conversations with Steve, and he did try and hire me after I quit Disney about 2 months after we did that keynote together. And that's why I say maybe I'm not so smart because I said no. But Apple stock was at like $5 a share. Mm. And that was before the three splits it's had. So it was really like at $1.50 a share. Mm. It was not a almost $3 trillion company. It was maybe a $100 million company. So, it was just a different time and place for Apple. And the way I make myself feel better about having said no is their stock really didn't take off till about 8 or 9 years after I said no.
Mm.
And one of my good friends, I won't say who, says, you would have never lasted 9 years working for him. So don't blame yourself for having said no. But I mean, the thing that I got from him was, because I remember him showing him a music service that I bought when I was at Real Networks called Rhapsody in 2003, which was the first legitimate streaming service for music that had all major label content. And it was still limited in what it offered in terms of the content, and there was no portability. This is pre-iPod. And I went up and I showed it to him, and he's like, that's kind of cool, but it's not really good for – he was right. It was too early. It wasn't a great service yet. You know, he did what he did best. He waited for something to be at the right time. I talked about the importance of timing. And then he pounced. I mean, the iPod was not even close to the first MP3 player. There were probably 50 or 100 before it, going back 4 or 5 years. Mm. But he realized when consumers were ready for it, and then he built the absolute best version of it, and then he came out with the most brilliant marketing for it.
Right.
And there's a lot to be learned there.
Richard, before I let you go, tell me a little bit about, I mean, your journey is just amazing. Where did you grow up? What did your father do for a living? And how did you get on this journey and this path?
Yep. I grew up in Los Angeles. In
high school?
About 2 miles south of UCLA.
What high school?
And University High School.
Oh, wow.
Emerson Junior High School, right behind the Mormon Temple there in West LA.
Yeah.
And my father was originally an engineer and then became a salesman, then became an executive and finished his career as the CEO of Cardkey, the office management security system company.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, I lost my dad at age 79 about 3.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're talking about, you know, Warren Zevon passed at 53, and it made me feel a little old because I'm now 59.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a lot of perspective on life and how I approach life now. And you know this, Dr. Clapper, and we're not ashamed to say it, but we also lost our 15-year-old daughter, Grayson, mm-hmm. to suicide, too much shy of her 16th birthday about 12 years ago. So you want to talk about facing mortality and right. the worst thing that could absolutely happen to a parent and how it totally put me out of commission for at least 1 or 2 years and then changed my entire perspective on life.
Mm.
But grew up in, kind of got off your core question, you know.
What did you went to UCLA?
Lower middle class. Went to UCLA.
What did you study? What was your major? What did you study in UCLA?
Good question. I studied math, computer science. I did not like math. I wanted to study computer science. It was so early in the evolution of computer science. There was not yet a computer science degree at UCLA. Mm. You only had a math computer science or an engineering computer science. But I studied that. I learned to program. I fell in love with it. It just, you know that scene in Good Will Hunting where the mini driver, is that her name? Character's
yep.
asking Matt Damon, like, I work so hard on this organic chemistry and it doesn't, I can't, and you just write stuff down. How does that work?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, you know how Mozart could just play the piano? And Matt Damon said, with organic chemistry, I just know how to play. It just makes sense.
Yep, yep.
And for me, the programming computers was like that.
Oh,
like,
God.
It just made sense to me.
We're so
and even today, so like jealous. When I think about what should come out in the next year or two, I understand how programmers think and computers are and where technology is going, and it just makes sense to me. So that's how I got into it, you know. And it was a great major to graduate with in 1985. And I've done 4 startups, and I've been the president of Online, and I've been the chief strategy officer of Real Networks, and I've invested in over 100 tech and media companies, and I'm the chairman of a few now. I'm an investor in a sports company called Clutch Points that you should know about if you don't, which is an awesome site for live sports information.
Yeah.
And it's been a great run, but it's not been easy. I had Crohn's disease starting at age 13. I was extremely sick till I was 20 when I had most of my colon removed. We lost a child 12 years ago, and I've had my own health issues. And and I have a best friend who has a lot of health issues that are my age, and you're about my age, I'm guessing, Dr. Clapper, but
no,
we're at the age
I'm
now,
65. I'm older than you,
okay.
A lot.
Well, when you were 16 and I was 10, it was a big difference.
Right.
But when you're 65 and I'm 59, it's not a big difference. And you hear every month about a friend or a colleague, associate passing away. Right?
Yes, yeah, you do. I miss
them. We're just at that age. And I have this perspective, like, life is a journey that ends in death for all of us. We have no idea when it's going to be.
Right.
And every day is blessed. And you really have to get to the point. And I'm not trying to preach. It took me 20 plus years to get to this point where you truly appreciate every day.
Yep.
Excuse me. And you appreciate what you have and you live in the moment. You know, I joke, I started meditating about 3 years ago and it took me about 6 months to figure out that it was actually worthwhile. And fortunately, somebody who did it told me, you got to do it every day for 6 months and don't give up. And I do it, and I use this app, which I'm also an investor in, called Calm. It's calm.com.
Mm-hmm.
And what I said to my wife recently is, because we have 2 dogs, and they're just happy as ever, no matter what we're doing, no matter what's going on. And I said, I think what I've learned in 3 years of meditation is I need to be like a dog. Which is just
Bruce Lee said, be like water. Richard Wolpert says, be like a dog. I love it.
Yeah. And going back to the Warren Zevon clip you played, right? Yeah. Enjoy every sandwich. Enjoy that simple. I had an issue 2 days ago. I was trying to land my drone on the back of a boat in a lot of wind, and I miscalculated, and it came right into my arm, and not bad, but sliced my arm open like a 3-inch gap. I needed to do a butterfly stitch on myself.
Wow.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm not I'm not saying I'm into pain, but it was an adventure, and I wasn't hurt bad, and I saved the prop, and I'm going to put it in a little keepsake box. This is the prop that attacked me one day. And instead of crying and not, or being bummed or worrying about things, it was like, this is an adventure. I'm on this adventure. I want to enjoy every minute. Any of us could be taken at any minute of it. None of us have any, promise. We don't like to think about that because mortality is scary. But my friend and I came up with a saying that's apropos for the topic today, and I want you to listen to this because I think it's profound, and I'm not trying to be pompous. But if you embrace the reality of your mortality, it is liberating.
Yeah, good one. Richard, I can't think of a better person to launch the weekend, to launch our lives than talking to you. I'm going to be out of time here. I can't thank you enough and for making the effort from so far away to call in. God bless you. I really appreciate it. And it's such an honor to know you and to hear your perspective. Steve Jobs is one thing, but to hear your perspective, it comes from the heart, and you wear it on your sleeve. And that's the best way to be in life is to be 100% real. And you are. And thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you so much.
All right, Richard. God bless you. Have a great day today. All right, Warriors, we'll take a break. I'm sure I messed up the entire segments. Will, I apologize. You'll have to figure this out. The number's 877-710-ESPN. What a beautiful person to talk to, the great Richard Wolpert. You're listening to the Weekend Warriors Show, as you do each and every Saturday here on 710 ESPN.
Hey, it's Sedano. You know there's no better way to start your Saturday than when my guy, Dr. Clapper, and the Weekend Warrior Show, 7 to 9 a.m. Saturday mornings. And don't miss Sedano and LZ back on Monday at 4 o'clock on 710 ESPN.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
With tinted windows. Can you imagine?
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
While I'm in Italy.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, we all get thrown off the horse. But that's not what I want to talk about. We all get thrown off the horse. Do you get back up on the horse? And how do you get back up on the horse? That's the key. The lines are lit up. Let's do some Clapper Vision with some Weekend Warriors, not just talking about Patrick Mahomes, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. Although I still have to teach you about dislocating your kneecap, which is what Patrick Mahomes had, and how he was able to bounce back. It's fascinating. But let's do some Clapper Vision with the Weekend Warriors. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Ronald in Inglewood. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Dr. Clapper, this is Rooney Sr. Dr. Clapper, I listened to the clips you played of Steve Jobs. It gave me energy. And then I listened to that guy that just went off. And some of the same things happened to me, my daughter, the past at 23. She was in a car accident. But I thought about all that. But it's not like the old days. I'm 72, my dad's 95, and thank God my dad his mind is still working. I talk to him every day. He's in New Orleans. But, Doc, my right hip is in such pain for the last, month or two. It's like I'm getting electrical currents coming from my hip. Maybe it's the lower back, I don't know. But it's going down my hamstring, and I feel it on the side of my calf muscle.
What do you do for a living? How old are you?
I'm a nurse. I'm a retired nurse. I still go and see a patient who's paralyzed 20 hours a month.
Really? You're a registered nurse?
No. I took the LVN courses, I should have done the RN thing.
Wow.
But, a guy was in an accident. He's paralyzed, separation, fifth and sixth disc or something like that. But they took me from the hospital, from Daniel Freeman. I went to his home, And back in those days, I took care of Richard Pryor when he had his MS.
Wow.
I was the personal nurse for Mayor Bradley.
Wow.
Mayor Tom Bradley.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I did Richard Pryor for 3 months.
Was he funny? Was he still able to be funny when you were taking care of him?
Oh, I'm glad you said that. Listen, where I can smoke, and I got him an ashtray, and he said, no, that's not big enough. So he said, go to the emergency room and get one of those. I said, man, I can't carry that thing. It's full of sand or something. And he said, just take the top off and bring it up here. And I did. And I found out after a month or so, Richard, he liked to look at animal movies.
Really?
And his favorite was these gorillas. One gorilla went in the wrong neighborhood, and these other ones chased him. And he went up a tree, and he was hanging from a top branch. And the other guys, they waited for their leader to come. They wouldn't go and get him. They had to wait for the leader. And when the leader came, he ran up the tree, and he grabbed the monkey's arm. Well, these are not monkeys. These are gorillas. And he grabbed his arm, and he pulled his arm off at the clavicle. I mean, he pulled it off his body.
Oh, my God. And, listen, I saw on YouTube this week, I was watching to prepare for this show, the Amsterdam Zoo, where they got the lion habitat. There's the big male lion and three of his wives, adult female lions, and they have water in front so the tourists don't go close to the lion. So this is what you're watching. It's on YouTube. You can watch this, the Amsterdam Zoo.
And a heron,
one of these giant, beautiful birds, flies, and he's flying around in the zoo and sees this water. So he swoops down and starts hanging out in the water in front of these four lions, the male and the three females. And you watch on YouTube as this female lion is going, are you kidding me? This is like a can of tuna fish dropped out of the sky right into our habitat.
Yeah.
And this bird goes, he doesn't know from nothing. He goes closer and closer. And all of a sudden, the female lion jumps, puts that heron in its mouth, and runs into the back where the trees are. The next thing you see is the big male lion runs into the back behind the tree, and the female runs away because the rule in the jungle is, I'm the big male lion, and whatever I want, I can have. It's unbelievable, so totally can relate
to
Richard
right.
Pryor. Listen, Ronald, there's a book I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Hips. I wrote a knee one as well. Heal Your Hips. You need to get a copy. Heal Your Hips, and then you'll need to come and see me. And I want to thank you for calling and teaching us all about Richard Pryor. Thanks so much.
Okay.
All right, young man.
Dr. Clapper.
You're very welcome. Pleasure to talk to you. All right, Warriors, let's talk about Patrick Mahomes because we're going to see him play, even though my favorite player tomorrow. Yes, it's Matthew Stafford. Yes, I want the Rams to win. Can we beat the 49ers? I think we can. But the game that I'm actually most interested in and rooting is Joe Burrow of the Cincinnati Bengals. Because what his life story, apropos to today's topic, is one of do not quit, do not be something else. Urban Meyer was the coach at Ohio State who told Joe Burrow, you're not good enough to be the quarterback here. And he sat on the bench for 3 years until one day he said, I believe in myself. If he ain't going to believe in me, I got to get out of here. Broke his heart. And he ended up transferring to LSU and ended up winning the Heisman Trophy and breaking every record in football. Forget about the SEC. Becomes the number one pick, and another tragic event occurs. He tears his ACL. But we can fix that. And Joe Burrow, on his repaired knee, used to be career-ending. Talk to Joe Namath about tearing your ACL. But it ain't 1960 anymore. It's 2022. Joe Burrow is fine, just fine. The odds makers, I'm sure, are going to say the Kansas City Chiefs are going to win. All the experts. I watched TV last week, and I watched all the experts. I forgot if it was CBS or whatever. Every one of them, Boomer Esiason, Phil Sim, they all went down the line. Tennessee Titans versus Joe Burrow. Not one of them I think Boomer Esiason, actually, because he used to be a Cincinnati Bengal, picked him. But everybody else, Tennessee Titans. And he beat the Tennessee Titans. He's already beaten the Kansas City Chiefs this season. But they're still not giving him a chance. Oh, my God. If Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals beat Patrick Mahomes, it would be unbelievable. But I want to do some clap revision.
Hell yeah.
About Patrick Mahomes. You remember, he was on the field with his knee in full extension, tackled, grabs his knee, and literally the training staff comes onto the field and pops the patella, the kneecap, back into place. Patrick Mahomes didn't need surgery, treated conservatively, went on to heal, and look at him. He's going to play tomorrow for the AFC Championship. That's because your body is its own best healer. But why does a kneecap dislocate? So let's do some clapper vision. If you feel your knee right now, whether you're standing or sitting, mostly you're probably sitting, either driving or sitting at home, feel the skin in front of your kneecap. Doesn't that kneecap feel flat like an Oreo cookie, like a Ritz cracker, like a poker chip? Yeah, that feels flat because it is. But the inside of your patella, inside of your kneecap, actually has a ridge. Looks like a mountain range, a ridge. Because it fits perfectly into the thigh bone called the femoral notch. There's a groove, there's a valley, male-female fitting of your kneecap directly in that spot. And here's the clapper vision. If you've ever gone bowling, which everybody has, you know what happens when you throw that ball down the lane. But if you're not a very good bowler, what happens to that ball? It goes in the gutter. I'm from New York. There's no R in the word gutter. G-U-T-T-A-H. Gutter. Like clapper. K-L-A-P-P-A-H. But look at how beautifully the ball stays in the gutter. Because it's a half a sphere. It's a hemisphere. The gutter, negative, and half of the ball fits perfectly in it. Well, what if the gutter was more shallow? It wasn't half the size of the bowling ball, which locks it into place because it's half as high as the bowling ball. Let's say it was just a shallow groove that the bowling ball fits in. Well, it ain't going to stay in the gutter. It's going to go back in the lane. You need a certain depth to the gutter to keep the bowling ball riding true. And that is the patella. The patella is the bowling ball. The gutter is that trochlea in the femur, and it keeps it in place. People who dislocate their kneecap, usually, there's many reasons, but one of the main reasons is they have a very shallow gutter. Trochlea is too shallow. And when are you most at risk? When your knee is bent, your hamstrings are pulling on your knee to flex it, to bend it. Guess what? The joint reaction force, as we call it, the kneecap is solidly stuck in the gutter. It ain't coming out. But you're at risk for a knee dislocation if someone hits you from the side while your knee is in full extension. Ah, that's when it can pop out of place. And that's what we saw in Patrick Mahomes' case. The other clap provision I want to give you is horseback riding. When you sit on that horse, to keep the horse galloping or riding straight, you better not pull on those leather reins on either side, because that's how you turn the horse's head and therefore turn the horse. You pull to the right, he goes to the right. You pull to the left, they go to the left. That leather strap is on either side of your kneecap. It's called the retinaculum. And when you dislocate your knee, you rip it. But it can bleed, it can scar, and it can heal itself. So when Patrick Mahomes dislocated his kneecap, the bowling ball came out of the gutter, and the leather strap ripped. Well, straighten his knee out completely, pop it back into place. You won't be able to pop it back in with his knee flexed. You got to straighten the knee, pop it back into place, and immediately put him in a knee immobilizer or a brace. he'll get swollen because there's bleeding that happens when the retinaculum, the leather strap, if you will, tears. It bleeds. It scars. And guess what? It becomes stronger than it was before. And that is why, without surgery, Patrick Mahomes and his knee injury, he's back on the field because he healed on his own. Joe Burrow, he injured his knee, but he injured it to structures on the inside of the joint where the synovial fluid blocks the ACL from healing on its own. But with the technology we have now that we didn't have for Joe Namath, the arthroscope allows us to use a graft and fix the ACL, and he's better than as good as new. He's better than he was before. So orthopedics, what did Dr. Ranawat teach me? The eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. For me, that's what I'll be looking at, the injuries and how you get above those injuries. Because trust me, I don't care which team, whether it's baseball, hockey, football, you know who wins the championship? The people who are able to deal with their injuries, because they're all got injuries of some kind. But how you get through those injuries and understanding those injuries is what this show is all about. For me to be able to teach you, using words to paint pictures, just like Chick Hearn called it a word's eye view, just like Vince Scully could paint pictures with words. That's Clapper Vision. And thanks for telling your friends. Let's talk about next week. Next week, we're going to go to the food business. My favorite ice cream place in L.A. is Handel's Ice Cream in Redondo Beach. The owner of that ice cream is going to be my guest. So I'm already thinking, what am I going to talk about? How am I going to talk about ice and ice cream? Well, wait till you hear about Vince Lombardi and his proud new invention, which backfired and became the ice bowl for the championship in the 60s. I'm going to tell you what happened, and it relates to ice. And then I want to talk about an interview that Vanilla Ice had talking about his hit song, Ice, Ice Baby. What does it have to do with ice cream? You're going to learn next week. I cannot wait to put this show together for Will and I to be here next Saturday. I'm going to leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. And until then, have a great week. And I'll see you on the radio.